TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Julian Assange is free. What this means for the rest of us. Immediately after it became known that the founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, was set free from a prison in London and had boarded a plane towards Guam, the DM25 channel launched a conversation between Yanis Varoufakis, Srećko Horvat, Karin DeRigo, and others. Here are excerpts from that conversation. Yanis Varoufakis is a Greek economist and politician. He's Secretary General of DiEM25. That's a radical political movement in Europe that he co-founded in 2016. Srećko Horvat is a Croatian philosopher, author, political activist, and co-founder of DiEM25. And Karin DeRigo is coordinator of the local DiEM25 group in Berlin. Here's Yanis Varoufakis.
In these dark times, it's magnificent to have a few rays of light to pierce through the darkness and to allow us to celebrate that the human spirit cannot be confined into the darkness forever, that the human spirit cannot be defeated, that resistance is never futile, even when it seems to be so. There were times when, with Srećko Horvat and with others of you here, we felt that the struggle to save Julian was probably lost. As most people know, at this very moment, Julian is on an airplane. It is disgraceful that he has to pay for it himself, that it is a chartered private flight that the Australian government, the British government, the American government, who have caused all this pain, are not paying for. So remember, we need crowdfunding to help pay for the $500,000 necessary to take Julian to Guam, somewhere in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific. Let me act as a pseudo-journalist for one moment, for the benefit of those viewers and listeners who do not know exactly what has been going on. Look, it was around 9 months ago when Julian's family informed me that there was an offer by the American government of a plea deal. It sounded simultaneously like good news and bad. The plea deal was you come to the United States, you agree to drop your resistance to the extradition process in the United Kingdom, you come to the United States, you appear in front of a court as a prisoner of the United States government, you declare yourself to be guilty of a lesser charge, espionage charge, but not the top notch which would qualify for him for the death penalty of, you know, 1,000 years in prison or whatever. You will be sentenced to 5 years in prison. And then, because you've already spent 5 years in Belmarsh, this will be considered time served, and then you will be released and you will be extradited to Australia. That was months ago that it was proposed to him. I can tell you that he said no, because he's not guilty of anything. And also because of the fear that once you end up in the jurisdiction of Virginia, where the process started 12 years ago of persecuting him and making sure that he dies in a supermax prison as if he was going to go there. So there have been two parallel processes. One is his family has been pushing Julian to accept, because this is a family that has been completely wrecked by all those years of having Julian dying slowly inside that prison. And I understand that entirely. And at the same time, there was negotiations on how to ensure that he does not spend 1 hour in prison, and especially not a supermax prison, not in any cell, even of the judicial system, of the court system in the state of Virginia, in the District of Columbia. So in the end, it's clear now that I learned from the media myself, I didn't have any inside information, that the deal was completed. They found the nearest American jurisdiction, which is as near to this the territory of the Australian Commonwealth, which is somewhere in a godforsaken little island near Guam. And he's being flown there on the understanding that he will not be incarcerated, not for 1 hour. He'll appear in front of a judge. The fact, however, remains, and this is crucial, that he will have to appear in front of a judge with his lawyer. The prosecutor will be there. The judge will address the prosecutor and ask if a plea deal has been made. The prosecutor will say yes. Then Julian will be instructed by the judge to express in his own words his guilt. So he's not just going to plead guilty, he will have to explain why he's guilty and not contest his guilt. And then it will be up to the judge, at least formally, to accept this elocution, as it's called, the expression of remorse and guilt by Julian. I'm explaining this in sordid details so that we know exactly what is happening and to understand why, while it is a major victory for Julian Assange and for all of us who have been tirelessly working towards his release, because the United States government has been shamed into giving up the task of killing him. The United Kingdom has completely, completely been humiliated by this. Because remember, the United Kingdom was saying for 12 years now that there's nothing they can do, that since an extradition has been asked for, first by Sweden, remember Sesko, and then by the United States, well, they're hands have been tied. Bullshit. How can I prove that? It's really very simple. You know, they let him fly out of Britain without the extradition process having been rescinded. So it is clear they were not obliged to respect the extradition process, either the Swedish one or the American one, because clearly today they let him leave the country without the extradition process being formally suspended. So the United Kingdom, as an entity, as a state, should be hanging its collective head in shame today, as should the Biden administration and Trump administration. But nevertheless, while we have every reason to celebrate, because it just goes to show that the pressure from the movement has borne fruit, and that is a great moment for us, for the movement, for Julian, for everybody who has been fighting against all odds, the powers that be, the totalitarianism that be. It's a great day for us, for the movement, but it is a major defeat for journalism. The editors of the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, Der Spiegel, Le Monde should also be hanging their heads in shame because they have been defeated. The fact that Julian, in order to survive, and to be reunited with his family and his friends, the fact that he needs to stand in front of a judge and accept the jurisdiction of the United States outside the borders of the United States, accept the right of the United States government to imprison somebody for 5 years, remember time spent 5 years, for a crime committed outside the United States by a non-US citizen. And what crime? The crime of telling the truth as a journalist. You know what this means? It means that the legacy of Dan Ellsberg, the hero, our hero, of the Pentagon Papers, who published damning information right from within the Pentagon about the Vietnam War, and who stood his ground, in the end, he never acquired a criminal record. He was never convicted of anything. So journalism survived the persecution of Dan Ellsberg. By the way, Dan Ellsberg was a great supporter until he died very recently of Julian Assange. But Julian Assange is now going to have a criminal record, which of course is a badge of honor for him. But it is a badge of disgrace for the New York Times, for the Washington Post, for the Guardian, who did nothing to defend him during the difficult dark ages where Sreczko and I and all of you were fighting for his freedom. And they were condemning him as a rapist, as a supporter of Donald Trump, and all that jazz. Allow me to say a few words now about that dark age, that dark period. And Sreczko will add to that, I'm sure. There was a time when we would be in the Ecuadorian embassy, and for hours and hours and hours, be discussing with Julian the avalanche of mud that was being thrown and piled upon him. And, you know, the powers that be, the totalitarian states, United States, United Kingdom, and so on, they were very smart about the way they did it. Because what they did was this. They tried to find the weak link. You see, if you accuse me of being a communist, I don't mind. You're probably right. If you accuse me of being anti-NATO, anti-US government, I'll say, yes, that's exactly right. If you accuse me of being a rapist, if you accuse me of being anti-Semite, an anti-Semite, which is what, of course, happens all the time, that really hurts. Because as feminists, as anti-racists, the mere mention of these accusations is a major, major, major wound. It's a trauma. And that's what they did. You will recall, some of you who were with us with DiEM25 back then, that especially immediately after Jeremy Corbyn became the leader of the Labour Party, at a time when, of course, Julian was still being persecuted and prosecuted, and he was in the Ecuadorian embassy. And that time was when, of course, that incredible case by Sweden, supposedly on rape charges, which never were laid, never. It was just mud. It was just innuendo. There was never a charge, even for sexual assault, for rape, or anything like that. It was just innuendo. The kind of mud that sticks, and there's nothing you can do to wash it because you can't even address a charge that has been laid down against you. But I remember, and Sreshko will confirm that in his own words, I remember how desperate those days were when we were losing all our comrades. Remember, DiEM25 had an agreement to merge our efforts with a very valiant, progressive, youthful movement in Britain called Another Europe is Possible. Do you remember that? And do you remember why that alliance, that merger, was at the very last moment jettisoned and blown up? Because they demanded that we ditch Julian Assange because he was a rapist. We lost young feminists, women and men, across the United Kingdom and across Europe, within our own movement. Do you remember that, Sreshko? We had people within our movement, even in the SCC, in the Coordinating Collective, saying, come on, let's ditch Julian. He costs us more than he benefits us. But we stood our ground and we said no. And we had even had an all-member vote in order to defeat that attempt for DiEM25 to be co-opted by the successful wave of vilifying Julian, which took root within the progressive movement in Northern Europe, not so much Southern Europe, but in Northern Europe. Do you remember that in November 2018, Bernie Sanders, myself, David Adler, and others were in Vermont, and we started the Progressive International? Well, let me be very clear on this. After we started the Progressive International, Bernie Sanders and I proclaimed the PI and came out and said, join us, to the world. We had a message from Bernie's senatorial team saying, but the condition is you drop Julian because he's too hot a brick or a potato for us to handle. And very soon after that, one of our comrades, a wonderful woman who was part of the Progressive International, the Prime Minister of Iceland, Jakob's daughter, signaled to us that as long as we support Julian, a rapist, in inverted commas, she cannot be part of the Progressive International. I'm saying that because, you know, now everybody can be pro-Julian. Everybody can pretend that they were part of this movement. Even the Labour Party under my very, very dear friend and comrade, Jeremy Corbyn, they would not pick up the phone when I called them to seek the support of the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn for Julian. I'm saying this because our memory is necessary to be preserved as a bulwark against what will happen next to other comrades, to other freedom fighters like Julian Assange. And when I say other, I mean other. The Australian Prime Minister is presenting himself as a good guy who's helped. No, he hasn't. No, he hasn't at all. The only reason why Biden has relented was because he's losing the youth vote as a result of his support of genocide in Gaza. And he wants to make some relatively costless gesture to the, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders supporters who voted for him in 2020 and who are probably not going to vote for him now, a costless gesture. That is what it is for him. It's great that we managed to push him in that direction. But, you know, Mr. Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, in my books, you are guilty. You could have said a year and a half ago to President Biden that if America wants Australia to spend $360 billion on American submarines, the first thing they need to do is drop the charges, not condemn him and take him to the Guam base now. And speaking of Australia, given that we have managed to work towards the freedom of Julian, what about David McBride? David McBride is another whistleblower who is now inside a high security prison in Australia. Why? Because he revealed, just like WikiLeaks had revealed, David McBride was the person who exposed the Australian massacre of Afghanis, the Australian soldiers' massacre of Afghanis, a massacre which was revealed, exposed. There was a royal commission. It found the Australian military guilty of a massacre in Afghanistan because David McBride did expose them. None of them ended up in prison. David McBride is in prison in Australia. So, Mr. Albanese, I look at you in the face and I say, shame on you. You have had nothing to do with the remarkable, remarkable developments in releasing our friend and comrade Julian Assange. We need to carry on with along the lines of this spirit of solidarity to David McBride, to Boris Karalitsky, a socialist activist who is being held as a political prisoner in Moscow by Putin's regime. DiEM25 must show that we are here for the long term. And Julian, who was with us from the very, very beginning, is simply an inspiration that we are going to take to the Modi fascist regime in India. They're even thinking of imprisoning Arundhati Roy as we speak. This is just the beginning of the struggle. It is not the end of the struggle. It's the end of the beginning of the struggle. So let's hail Julian's success, our success in supporting Julian, and let's mourn together the manner in which European and American journalism has been condemned or will be condemned tomorrow by that kangaroo court in Guam or somewhere in the Pacific, because that will be an indictment on the freedom of journalism across the world. We will celebrate, we will take the moment to maybe even have a glass of champagne to celebrate Julian's freedom as a reminder of the essence of what we are all about as DiEM25, as the Progressive International. We have not allowed even comrades to bend our will and force us to betray Julian. We will not allow them to bend our will and force us to end the defense of other political prisoners and, of course, the whole of Palestine. Carpe diem.
Thank you, Yanis, for those powerful words. Over to you, Shechko. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be back, especially on this occasion, which, as Yanis said, on the one hand, is definitely a reason for celebration. But at the same time, into which I will also go in my talk, it is also a reason for worrying, but also for reflecting and for strategizing further. What this day today has shown is that activism makes sense. And I say this after the European elections, with the results we all know. I say this at a moment when the left, generally, globally, is at a very bad state, when it's divided, when it's impotent to a certain degree. I think it's important this day because it shows that activism works, that millions of known and unknown activists, you know, from known activists like Brian Eno, MIA, and many others, to many unknown activists who were, you know, doing protests from Vienna to London, from other cities all across the world. I think it shows that this kind of belief those people had and those kind of persistence and those kind of this kind of dedication of their own life towards a principle which at the beginning and during all these years, maybe to some, looked like a lost cause, I think this gives hope. And I'm not someone who actually believes in hope, but today I'm really hopeful because of this. It all goes back to 2007. It is the time before the smartphones, at least the smartphones we know today, when everyone could record something. And at that time, it was really a precedent. It was really something new and something very courageous to publish the video recordings which he received from Chelsea Manning, which showed that two Reuters journalists and civilians in Iraq were being killed by the US government. Nowadays, unfortunately, we face another problem. Instead of not knowing what our governments do, today they do it in broad daylight. Today we witness live stream genocide. So the situation, in a way, is different, but I would say that WikiLeaks opened the door for revealing war crimes of various governments, and it's still so important. So to come back to what Yanis said, I also think besides the celebration, it's also a moment to stop. It's a moment to realize this will have grave consequences on journalism. Why? Because Julian has to plead guilty for a crime he didn't commit. And if he pleads guilty for a crime he didn't commit, then everyone who is a journalist could face the same destiny as Julian. And there is also one irony. I mean, it's not an irony, but it again shows this kind of cynicism of those in power. At the beginning, the US government was doing everything in order to show that he is not a journalist, that he is a hacker and I don't know what, cyber terrorist. I mean, you can watch these videos on the internet from Hillary Clinton to Joe Biden, what they say about Julian. Nowadays, as it appears, because that's the reason why he's flying to the middle of the Pacific, he suddenly became a journalist from the perspective of the US government. So as it suits them. I also think it's important to mention that he's flying to a place which is precisely a place which is the most heavily nuked place in our known universe. So after the Second World War, which finished with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, as we know, the Cold War started by nuclear tests precisely in the Marshall Islands and in the Pacific region where Julian is now going. And I find it symbolically very interesting because everything Julian was fighting against was precisely the military-industrial complex, including Silicon Valley, including Google, including a very deep understanding of technology. And where he has to plead guilty is precisely a place which is, I think, the worst symbol of US imperial power and also nuclear tests. And I think for that reason, we should really celebrate once he's on Australian soil. But I think we should also, not just SDM, but also other movements who joined and who created already a sort of informal network across the world, strategize what are the next steps. Not just how to invent some sort of damage control for the grave consequences of journalism, but how to turn this energy off this movement, which obviously exists and which is all obviously getting much stronger, into something which could in the future prevent these cases. And I wish the best to Julian. If he is watching that, he can count, you can count on a drink with us, and we hope to see you very soon. Yeah.
Thank you, Shlechko, for that reminder. Now we'll go over to Karen. Karen, who's in Germany.
Thank you, Davide. I would like to join the celebration on Assange, and I wish him all the best together with his family back, finally, after 13 years of prosecution, basically, not only in prison, but also in the embassy. And he had to face this high security prisons that, let me say, very clearly, not even the mafia bosses in Italy under the 41bis have ever experimented. And he did that for denouncing crimes for which the criminals are still free. Let's not forget that, because he had to pay for them as well. And though we are super happy for him, we must not forget that this job, being a journalist now and sticking to the truth, costs lives. Because according to Reporters Without Borders, for example, only in 2023, 99 journalists were killed, most of them after the 7th of October. And for 2024, 21 were already killed and more than 500 imprisoned. So we see how the institutions mainly target very clearly and very brutally activists and journalists. Let me remind for 1 second the Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu al-Akle, Anna Politkovskaya, Daphne Caruana, all these people paid with their lives because they were being really heroes. And they needed to face not only disinformation, not only smearing campaigns. I mean, cameramen and companies, they do not want really independent press. Let's be clear, they don't want people call out their crimes. So it's becoming increasingly dangerous, this job. So we need to support everybody who is doing that freely. And talking about Germany, because obviously the situation has changed dramatically in the last month, the attacks and the smearing campaigns against freedom of speech, against activists, protesters, every person criticized in Israel has been so strong and so blatant that international journalists from other TVs have always been very critical and very surprised even to see something like this in a supposedly democratic country. So I think every country has an Achilles heel, like a topic that really touches the nerves, the painful nerves. And for Germany is exactly this relationship to Israel and the Palestinian cause. The sole reasons for which the freedom of expression can be sacrificed at once, then you know that you are not free. And we really need independent media, desperately, also in Germany, everywhere in the world, independent journalists that are really focused on telling the truth, because only in that way we can really save democracy and we can be really free in the end and participate like that to the liberation of everybody else. Thank you.
That was Karin DeRigo, along with Janis Varoufakis and Srećko Horvat. She participated in the discussion headlined "Julian Assange is Free, What This Means for the Rest of Us." They spoke while the plane carrying Julian Assange to freedom was still in the air, heading to Guam. By today, July 2nd, 2024, everybody has kept their promises, and Julian Assange is now free and back home in his native Australia. Thanks to Karin DeRigo for her endorsement of independent media. That most likely is bringing this radio program to you right now. There are 13 more programs on Julian Assange, just on the tucradio.org website, produced by me, Mariah Gillarden, and free for you to hear. And you can watch the full 56-minute video on YouTube. Search for the title, "Julian Assange is Free, What This Means for the Rest of Us." You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gillarden. Thank you for listening.